Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is my co-host and also friend, Joel.
Hi, my name is Joel, and I'm here to talk to you about a thing that many of you don't think could happen to you, called syphilis.
Even me?
Even you, yes. Oh. Look to your left. Look to your right. One of you has syphilis. Because we put syphilis in all the water. It's not your fault. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, the movie for this episode... Okay, this is the first 1949 pairing, because Curse on Me 2 movies this year, is the lesser-known kind of... It was hard to find for a bit, now it's easier, but still not that available, unless you have an all-region player. Is The Quiet Duel from 1949.
It play about a doctor.
It's based off of a stage play. I can't find it. But yeah, it's based off of a play, and it's about a doctor who's doing a surgery, and...
I'm looking at the Wikipedia article. Huh? The play is called The Abortion Doctor by Kazuo Kaikuda. Hmm. Why is it called The Abortion Doctor? Oh, okay, well, we'll get into it, but they specifically point out that that is not going to happen in this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe in the play he was an abortion doctor, but in this one, he's just an OBGYN, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, he's a surgeon. He does surgeries.
Well, wait, no, your father was the OBGYN.
Yeah, his father and my father were both the OBGYNs.
And he was... the we're talking about is Toshiro Mifune. I think it's the second movie he did with Kurosawa, or the third. I didn't check which came out first, Quiet Duel or Stray Dog.
Dr. Koji Fujisaki.
Yeah. And, unlike the last few movies, I actually have a review for it from 1983, just from November, New York Times. It's by Vincent Canby. He reviewed Pigs and Battleships and what was it? And some other Kurosawa movie that got a late release in the U.S. or something. And pretty much his review was this kind of going over a plot and saying Mifune gives a good performance, even though like he's playing opposite what he usually does with Kurosawa.
That was based on his having seen the other movies before in 1980 or up until 1983. So
yeah,
this was actually Toshiro's second movie with Akira Kurosawa. The first being Drunken Angel.
Yeah,
and Stray Dog came out after that.
Yeah, so it's pretty... again, he was paired with your father, Takashi Shimura.
Yeah, he didn't have much to do in this movie.
No.
He was just, like, kind of a bonus character, you know. I'm glad, you know, whenever they're throwing that actor a bone, I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I think it's the only time they played father and son, because in Drunken Angel, he's a father figure, and in, what is it, Stray Dog, he's a father figure. But on this one, he's an actual father, but he's not really that relevant to it.
It's kind of a father figure in Seven Samurai, although it doesn't go quite that far, but he certainly has the power to tame Mifune's, you know, beastly samurai dude.
Yeah.
In bed and in life. No, not really in bed.
All right, so the cast for this one is, we mentioned before, Toshiro Mifune plays Koji. Your father plays... It's not really... His name's not really important.
Right, he's just... he's Dr. Shimura. Right? Yeah. Or Dr. Fujisaki.
Yeah. The fiancé character is played by... Misao? How do you say it?
Yeah, Misao.
Misao is played by Miki Sandro. And she was... Where is it?
Yeah, have we seen her in something else? I thought her face looked familiar, but I couldn't...
Oh, I have seen her in one other movie.
What's that?
It's a just-okay horror movie called Reincarnation from 2005.
Yeah, that's what it's. That's her second most popular movie, according to Letterboxd.
Yeah, I barely remember that movie. It's,
Let's looks see. Like. You can never tell with Japanese covers, like, what's going on, especially from, like, the 60s and 50s, because they all just kind of, like, smash images together. Unless there's a nude woman, a nude woman in the movie, because then she's going to be on the poster.
That's true. Let's see. The character Susumu Nakata is played by Kenjiro Umara, and he was in...
Let's see. I've seen him in I Am Waiting also.
That's what I'm going to talk about. I Am Waiting. In a Nikatsu Noir series.
And that is a very good movie. Like, if you're... I mean, I don't know if you would like it, Spencer, because it seems like when I like these movies, you're kind of like, yeah, it's okay. But like,
I'm not that crazy about 50s era Nikatsu stuff.
Nikatsu Noir movies. That, like, I really enjoyed it. The audaciousness of the storyline of the character, and he plays a boxer, so there's lots of punching, as you can imagine.
The character of his wife is played by Chieko Nakakita. And she is in Drunken Angel, One Wonderful Sunday, and Floating Clouds. I've seen a whole One Wonderful Sunday is Kurosawa's rom-com. It's not perfect, but it's definitely like a fun movie.
I feel like that newspaper one was kind of his rom-com. I mean, it's kind of a comedy dramedy thing, but yeah.
One Wonderful Sunday definitely plays more up on the Hollywood 40s rom-com type tropes. And Floating Clouds is Ozu's remake of his own movie from 1933, I think.
Uh-huh. I've seen her in a movie called Yearning by Naruse.
Okay.
Although I'm looking at the details, I gave it 4.5 stars, which means that I really liked it, but...
Don't remember anything?
Oh, God. I hate it when that happens. I'm sure if I saw part of it, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember this.
Oh, and she's in the...
When a woman ascends the stairs? Yeah, this lady gets around.
Yeah, okay. That's the movies. Is there someone else who is worth noting? Oh, here it is. And the kid who played the boy who farts? Kisao Tobita?
Oh, farting boy. Yeah, what's he up to?
He's in the movie we're going to cover for a special episode this month. Fires on the Plane.
Called The Farting Boy. Oh, Fires on the Plane, yeah.
He's in that, playing probably young soldier, because he's probably... He looked like maybe 10, 11 in this movie. So he would have been like 20 at the time of Fires on the Plane. So yeah, I didn't know he was in it, but I don't remember him at all in it.
Did you mention Noriko Sengoku?
Oh, that's what I forgot. Okay, no. But she is in Scandal, playing an identical character, actually.
Oh, interesting.
She plays a model friend of Toshiro in that one.
Oh, the one he like goes to visit, and she's like, oh, you never asked to take my photo anymore, or whatever, paint me anymore.
Yeah, and she just had a baby in that one also.
Oh.
And like, she's all embarrassed about her post-baby body, and he's like, you know, it's fine. You're still a beautiful woman.
I'm just never going to paint you. It's fine.
But he does paint her at some point. She's in Seven Samurai, and she's in a couple Kurosawa stuff.
Yep. Good to see. Those are the only three movies I've seen her in: Seven Samurai, Scandal, and The Quiet Duel.
She's in Stray Dog. I don't remember her in that at all.
She's one of the main characters in The Quiet Duel, though. She's got a pretty big part.
Yeah, and she has a big part in Scandal.
Yeah, it's not as big. I'd say, like, of the three main characters in this, obviously Toshiro, then I'd say her nurse character.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably the man who causes all the trouble in the first place, and then his fiancée, Toshiro's fiancée, in that order.
Yeah. Oh, and she's also in the Noriko is also in The Idiot, which we will get to.
What'd you call me?
In The Idiot, I'm preparing you for this now. It's kind of his stalker. It's kind of difficult to parse and watch because it's just kind of a lot of heavy despair all over the place.
I wouldn't exactly say this movie was uplifting.
Yeah, well, the Idiot is difficult. It's a very difficult movie. I'll say that.
It's based on Russian literature. What do you expect?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it because I don't know if I can discuss it.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll have who's the British guy? Alistair. Yeah, we'll have him on to help clear stuff up.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so I wanted to, before we get into the episode story, movie plot part, I want to get into a little bit into the VD during war stuff.
Oh, you're going to talk about your history of VD, so okay.
Yes. So, pretty much throughout history, soldiers in war have always had issues with them getting venereal diseases, and it's to the point that in World War One, per day, it's the U.S., this article something says the U.S. Army would, 18,000 soldiers per day would be out of commission because of VD. And in World War II, it got lowered to about 30 per day because medicine kind of advanced to that point. And it's pretty much gonorrhea and syphilis kind of were the big problem.
Yeah.
In World War II, the Allies would pass out apparently 6 condoms per man once a month. And they would have these ad campaigns to tell them to use protection and not get venereal diseases. And then you can go on, take a deep dive in Google into the whole syphilis propaganda posters, which get crazy.
And that's a fun time looking at, especially looking in the World War II era stuff of like, hey, the silent enemy, syphilis, you know, things like that, the shadowy monsters and stuff like that.
And they're usually featuring sexy women.
This temptress may look like a good time, but she's going to lead to death.
Yeah. So there's that. So, like, syphilis was a kind of a huge problem in, for everyone in World War II.
Right. Let's talk about the psychology here. Like, I assume that you would feel like you wouldn't have any issues sleeping with somebody while you were out at war because you were afraid you were going to die the next day or something like that, right?
Yeah. Like,
and
you literally don't know if you're going to, you know, get your arm blown off the next day or not.
Right. And if you're sleeping with a prostitute, they're not going to tell you whether they have VD or not because it's their job, you know? It comes off as like a large amount of stupidity in a historical context, but you also have to think of it in the sense that like there wasn't sex education. You know?
There was some, but it wasn't like what it is now.
Right. You probably still had a push for like no use of contraception and stuff like that because it's against God's will. Even back in the day, you know, there was a time where it actually felt more progressive, like where they were like, no, people should be wearing condoms and stuff like that. Mm. And then at some point, say, like, I think like in the mid 80s, all of a sudden we had this huge conservative pushback. But there was a time where it was like, no, seriously, you need to slap on a condom. Like, I don't care if you're out there having sex, just protect yourself because you're going to die. And we need healthy soldiers, but syphilis.
Yeah.
This movie felt like, it felt less like a movie to me and more like an educational film. And not because it doesn't have a story. Like, it has a decent story.
Mm-hmm.
And it has characters that you invest in. I almost feel like Toshiro didn't have his heart in it or didn't know what was required of him in the role. Like, specifically, there's a part where he is talking to his father, when his father first finds out that he has syphilis, and his father basically accuses him of, like, mm-hmm. being a slut when he was in the army.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got it when I was performing surgery on somebody, and I cut my hand. I didn't realize the patient had syphilis. And his father immediately believes him, because Toshiro's doctor character is a full-up, outstanding citizen. You know, he doesn't lie, although he doesn't sometimes, in order to help someone's feelings, he just simply uh-huh. doesn't tell, you know, talk to somebody. There's a part where he's talking to his dad, and then he kind of has, he's supposed to have, like, a passionate outburst about something. Uh-huh. And it didn't seem like, I don't know if the scene wasn't being paced well or something else like that. It seemed like he didn't have the fire behind what he was doing. Now, I say that, and then later there's a scene where Toshiro definitely has a lot of passion behind what he's upset about and stuff like that. That's a pretty good scene. Since you told me it's a play, I could totally see how that would go on stage, though.
Yeah. Well, this was his third movie, so he's still...
Oh, he's still rusty. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because he did, he did Snow Trails, then Drunken Angel, and then maybe something else after Drunken Angel, and then this. So this is like his third or fourth movie. So he was still trying to figure out what his, like, persona would be exactly.
He does a really good job of being a dastardly bastard in Snow Trails. Like, if we don't cover that for the podcast, I do recommend people check that out. Mm-hmm. My father has a very big role in that one, too. Of course, listeners, if this is your first time listening, whenever I talk about my father, I'm talking about the actor Takashi Shimura.
Yeah.
Who, in the movie Seven Samurai, looks a lot like my dad now. I'm half Mexican. Explain it to me. I don't know.
I don't know, Japanese and Mexican kind of look similar.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sometimes it depends on the region, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know Mexico stuff.
I know we should get into the movie. I do want to tell one more story.
Okay.
About my father, who told me this story. My mom and dad like to go to Vegas. That's kind of like their getaway haven. They go like once every 2 months at least. Like, they're going pretty often. They're both retired, so they can do whatever they want. One time my dad was at the card table, you know, blackjack, just doing that, and some mm-hmm. stranger walked up to him and said, "Excuse me, sir, are you Chinese?" And my dad said, "No." The guy just walked away. Like, what?
Wait, is your dad fully Mexican?
Yeah, he's a pretty dark brown Mexican dude. But, you know, we've both got these kind of almond-shaped eyes thing, mm-hmm. so... I guess it's not that far a stretch, but my dad just was just laughing when he was telling me this. Like, okay.
And your mom is not?
My mom is the whitest woman you've ever seen. No, she, you know, she was a redhead, Irish, Scottish blood.
No.
American, of course.
Yeah, so no mistakes there.
No commies in my house. Hmm. So yeah, you want me to talk about this movie?
Yeah, let's just jump into it. There's not really that much plot, though.
No, it's laid out like a play. It's from scene to scene to scene. I kind of wonder how the play starts, because the movie starts in the middle of the operating room. Like,
I think they're obviously,
yeah, during the war. And Dr. Toshiro, what is this character's name?
Koji, where is it?
Ah, yes, Fujisaki.
Fujisaki,
so we'll call him Koji. Koji is a surgeon. He's working on a patient who is bleeding out, and they're working as fast as they can to help this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody puts a scalpel down on the table the wrong direction, and as soon as you see that, you know what's going to happen. He reaches over and he cuts through his rubber glove, and he cuts his finger really bad, but he has to... The patient is, like, literally going to bleed out if he doesn't continue working, so he takes off his gloves and just continues working on the patient. The next scene we see is the patient is in the recovery room. This man is Susumu, is that correct?
Susumu Nakata.
Susumu Nakata. Susumu Nakata. Susumu. Okay, sorry. I got goofballs today. Oh, hold on.
Yeah, Susumu, like Susumu Fujita from Sanshiro Sugata.
Wait, there was a character named Susumu?
The actor who played Sanshiro Sugata is Susumu Fujita.
Oh, okay. And I'm not making fun of the name. I don't know. I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, it's not. Call a doctor.
Okay.
Anyways, we see the Susuma here convalescing with another patient. You know, he survived the surgery, and he's getting better. And the guy's like, they're just talking about like, oh man, too bad they fixed you up. They can get you out of the army. You know, now you're gonna have to go back in. He's like, they don't send people back in if they got a venereal disease. You know, and he's laughing about it, like, haha, I've got my free ticket out. And, excuse me, Pascal? Sorry, my cat wanted to interject. Kyoji just happened to be walking by and goes, excuse me, do you have syphilis? And the guy's like, yeah. And so, yeah. Kyoji goes and orders a blood test for him, and then a blood test for the patient, and a blood test for himself. And basically, he's got syphilis now from working on saving this patient's life. It's just this sad, sick twist of fate.
Yeah, and you learn it when the another surgeon, a surgeon assistant or something?
Yeah, the other operating surgeon that's in the military.
Yeah,
with him.
They're in a dark room and Toshiro asks him, so what were the results? And he just kind of mumbles and doesn't want to answer. And then,
yeah.
And
he knows by his reaction.
It's really good, quiet acting in that moment.
Yeah, that part I can totally deal. Or like I was enjoying this whole war scene thing like that. But that's the end of the war sequence basically.
Yeah,
we flash forward to after Toshiro is out of the army. It seems like it's been quite a time. You know, it's been like
2 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Been a long time, big, a long, 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 whatever. And he is now working at a clinic. Now, in the description for this movie, it says it's like this rundown, dirty clinic that he's working on. It didn't look that bad to me.
It looked pretty good.
Yeah, it looks fine.
I'd go there.
Anyways, it's his father's clinic. His father, yeah. Who we will now call Konosuke, who's played by Takashi Shimura, my dad.
Yeah. And he's an OBGYN?
And he is not aware that his son has syphilis. But as soon as his son came home, he broke off his engagement with his fiance. That's Misao.
Yeah, and that was, a six-year engagement or something?
Yeah. And he's not telling anyone why. He simply just broke it off, and he won't confess to anyone what he has been struggling with, even though he has to treat himself because of this. He's been taking the syphilis drug that they have for fighting the disease back then and injecting himself, when nobody's around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a long fight. Like he says, later in the movie, he says, it's, you know, when I got the disease... I just ignored it because I was in the military and I wanted to continue working. And so it's gone untreated for 2 years at this point.
Wait, so he was just discharged and not in 2 years later?
He was discharged 2 years later. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure how long he's been at the clinic by the time we catch up to him.
Okay, I thought and for some reason I was assuming he was discharged the next year in 45.
I don't know. I only watched it one time. How many times have you seen it?
Just one.
Okay, then it's all your fault. I don't know. I don't know. You have it on DVD.
I had it.
I mean, I have the DVD right now, but I'll send it back to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Well, either way, he's gone a long time with this disease untreated, and because of that, it's progressed. And it that doesn't mean he's in a hopeless situation. It just means that where it might have been easier to cure, it's now going to take 5 to 6 years. At least.
Yeah.
And that's only if he keeps up the treatment. Masao, his fiance, is just, she's just a wreck. Like, she doesn't get much of a character in this movie. She cares deeply for Koji. You know, comes by the hospital to visit him as often as possible, you know, and he's still, even though he's broken off the engagement, he's not, like, telling her, like, you need to leave me right now. He's just like, you should find somebody you love, you know, not like, we're breaking up, go away, or anything like that. Like, because, I don't know. It's, yeah, I mean, it's part of the title. It's the quiet duel that he's fighting within himself.
Yeah, like, Masao's not given much to do, really.
There's kind of a sexism to this movie, which I'm a freaking, you know, half white cis male, so I don't know where I got a leg to stand on when it comes to talking about sexism. But the three female characters that have like names and speaking parts in this movie all kind of just get like pushed over, with one of them, you know, coming out in the end a little bit happier because of it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, Kurosawa was never great with female characters. This is kind of his worst from what I've seen.
It wasn't his material, though, so...
Yeah, that's true. But I guess in Sugata, there wasn't much in terms of female characters either.
Well, yeah, especially in the second movie, that character basically is just pushed vehemently to the side. So, yeah, he's in this hospital that he's working with. There's also this other woman that we talked about. Her name is Ryu. Or, not Ryu, R-U-I, Rui?
Rui.
Rui. And she is an apprentice nurse, in the loosest sense of the term. She seems to, she almost seems to live at the hospital. I kind of think she does.
Yeah.
But she is really upset with Kyoji. Sorry. Really upset with Kyoji, because apparently she showed up there completely... Something got in my throat. She showed up there completely penniless and sick with something, and pregnant by somebody, a man that she is not with or whatever. And so they helped her. They cured her of whatever sickness she had, but she also wanted an abortion. She did not want to have the baby, and they just refused. I mean, how many movies... we've seen at least two movies, I feel like, since we started the podcast, where a woman has just gone and gotten an abortion and it's not a big deal. Like Pigs and Battleships and...
Tokyo Twilight.
Tokyo Twilight, yeah. But this one, I almost felt like Toshiro was going to look at the camera and go like, you should never have an abortion.
Yeah, I got that vibe too. I think maybe it was just the source material might have been more conservative in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it was more aimed at, like, unprotected sex in general. You know, not just syphilis, but you can have a baby.
This felt kind of like a propaganda movie a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, without, like, any direct, like, Japan is the best-ism, but it almost feels like a state-run film.
Yeah, like, I think that might be part of why it's kind of overlooked.
Yeah.
Compare it to, like, his stuff from a couple years later, it's kind of like, this gets way overshadowed pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's a very slight movie. It doesn't have anything that kind of blows you away or with the acting or anything like that. But,
no.
I still enjoyed it. I just wasn't so keen on the characterizations. But yes, so this apprentice nurse, Rui, she really dislikes the doctor because of all the things I said. And she is also completely unmotivated to, like, advance her career. There's a part where a police officer comes in and he's just talking to her because he needs to talk to the doctor, and she, I mean, she just, all she does is complain at first. Yeah. She's carrying a baby she doesn't want. They want her to be a nurse, and she doesn't know if she wants to do that. Yeah. And she thinks that the doctors are these rich people that are just making the decisions for poor people, and, you know, that's not right either. Which is totally true. That is totally not right. But she is the one who eventually finds out that that Kyoji has syphilis, because a different nurse mentions that the drug for syphilis infection has gone missing. And then she walks in on Kyoji as he's injecting himself with that missing medicine. She doesn't do anything with that information at first. She just kind of laughs about it. Like, ha ha, this bastard. You know, whatever.
Yeah. I'm looking up the patrolman character, and I haven't seen anything with him.
Hmm. What's the actor's name?
Isamu Yamaguchi.
There we go. I have only seen him in one movie called The Quiet Duel.
He's in an Ozu movie.
He's also in a Naruse.
Oh, well, the Ozu movie he's in is one of the silent ones, I think. It's your 31.
Older actor. Yeah, it looks like he didn't do much acting.
Oh, yeah, this is a long silent movie. It's 90 minutes.
Oh, he was in the fifth Moonlight Mask theatrical film, Moonlight Mask, The Challenging Ghost. Mm-hmm. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Now check that out. Yeah, so, okay, so she's got this information. He goes, Kyoji goes and helps at the police station, somebody that was in there. And I don't know if they were trying to build up attention, like he might get caught or something like that, but it's not really a thing. Like, other than that nurse knowing, and he doesn't seem like he's upset when she finds out that he's got this. He just kind of, he plays his character very tempered the entire time.
It felt like I thought she knew based off his reaction already.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know it was supposed to be a shock that she didn't realize until later in the movie.
Yeah. Are you talking about the apprentice nurse?
Yeah, like when she walks in on him injecting himself, I didn't. Because he just reacts so cold and calmly. It's like this. It's like no big deal to him that he was caught.
Right, but that's part of his character, holding back all these emotions that he has. He's being the level-headed person as much as he can be every single day. Like, every day, like I said, he's basically confronted by his fiancé, his ex-fiancé, and he just stands there and takes, you know, whatever's going on. Like, he doesn't show anything, and she takes that as this, like, hatred. Which, of course, you're gonna take it as hatred. Like, if you suddenly break off an engagement and you're not, like, you don't give somebody an explanation, and you don't, like, it's not, you know, she even says, like, it would be easier if you told me that you were in love with somebody else. And he can't do that. He's not going to lie about that. He's just going to continue to hold back this secret he has.
Yeah, he's almost too, well, the movie doesn't make it clear he is too pure of a person.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so she wasn't sick. She was trying to commit suicide. Okay, that was going on. This is the apprentice nurse that I'm talking about. Minagishi. But, yeah.
Something, I forgot what it was, but something happened where there was some event with Kyoji, and I don't know, it's Ozumu skipping a huge event to the aftermath of it. And I remember, like, he was supposed to do something, and Naroku, it was cut to her talking to another nurse about that event. You know what I'm talking about? Like, Ozu would do that. He'd skip a huge event, and you'd hear about afterwards. Well, I mean,
they were talking about an app. He had to do an app, and he meant he was going to do an appendicitis, you know.
Maybe that was
appendectomy. And then that's when we get introduced to the kid who can't eat until he farts.
Maybe that was it.
But, yeah, they didn't show the surgery on that part. His father finds out somehow. I'm trying to remember how that even ends up happening. Oh, is it because he mentions that somebody mentioned that drug was missing or something like that? I just watched this movie, but, like, there are parts of it just kind of mixed together because it's not a big event. But his father does find out. And like I said earlier, he at first accuses him of being promiscuous, and then when he explains that he got it while performing surgery on somebody he didn't know had syphilis, he immediately believes him. Now, I think the big deal of this whole thing is, like, he's not supposed to be performing surgeries on people if he has syphilis himself, right?
It never
explicitly gets brought up, but...
Is syphilis like physical contact or just like?
Well, he says, and this is a big deal, that it can be spread by something as little as saliva.
Hmm.
So I imagine if he sweats, you know, that's bodily fluid.
That's true.
And we do see him sweating. You know, people like, when he's doing surgery, people wipe the sweat off his brow and stuff like that.
Oh, in the father-son moment, like Shimura's one big scene, they close it by they each take out a cigarette and they do a little thing where like they turn to each other to light the cigarette and they don't have their lighters out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's a really cute moment where, you know, you get a real... That's like the one moment where you realize they are really are father and son.
Yeah.
Because they have, like, the same mannerisms when it comes to, like, smoking.
Yeah. And there's this... During this conversation, confrontation type thing where he reveals that he has it, the apprentice nurse is at the door listening because she can't help herself. She knows something bad's going to happen. And like I said, at this point, she still hates Kyoji. And when she finds out that he's sick and has been dealing with this, her heart, like, changes. And she decides that she does want to have her baby. And she might try to become an actual nurse. She might, you know. Yeah, figure it out. At some point, he runs back into Susuma, he's dressed in the nines, and he's acting like, oh, I've had a great life ever since the war, you know? I can't remember, where does he run into him?
He's at the police station or something.
And they just have a casual conversation about, you know, the disease, and he's like, oh, you know what? Yeah, after I saw a bunch of doctors, and they kept trying to tell me what to do, and I just decided I'm cured, so... That's it. That's the way it is. And I haven't had any problems since.
That's when he says, oh, my wife is pregnant, too.
Yep. And I got a wife, and she's pregnant. And, nope. Of course, Kyoji is not... He's not happy. He does not like hearing this because they are both infected. They both have to be infected. His child and all that stuff. He's like, you need to bring her in right away so that we can help with the baby. At the very least. And Susuma's like, you know, I don't think we're going to be doing that. You know, like I said, I don't have the disease anymore. It's fine. Everything's fine. Fake news. You're spreading fake news about me. He's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, it's a great convincing performance for a real piece of shit.
Once again, getting into actual, like, life, like, that is the kind of attitude people have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I've got, you know, something as bad as, I've got herpes, or I've got, any venereal disease where it's, like, not giving you trouble all the time, people will just not tell somebody, you know, have unprotected sex. And hey, it's like, whose fault is it, right? It's not my responsibility, even though I was aware I had the disease or something like that. Like, I hate it so much. I hate how selfish people can be.
Yeah, in most countries, it is allowed. You have to inform someone.
Yeah.
There's a court case in, where was it? It was in, like, Mozambique, I think, where a man gave AIDS to 50 women, and he, I didn't see what the end result, but Mozambique law is you're supposed to inform people, and so he's probably going to end up in prison for giving, like, 50 women AIDS.
So, yeah, they cut off his penis and balls and you know.
Well, they should.
Send him to the salt mine. I mean, 50 women, though, man. You gotta... What the fuck is this guy? Is he aphrodisiac incarnate?
It gets into some specific cultural stuff, so it kind of gets a little messy.
I understand. I'm just kidding.
It's an interesting case, just...
he's the Mozambique Tom Cruise, okay? No woman can resist him.
Yeah.
Even though his penis is purple and colored with warts.
Probably.
Just like Toshiro Mifune in this movie. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, in this movie, Toshiro's character is a virgin.
Yes, he is. And this comes into play in his big scene. Eventually, Kyoji, Dr. Kyoji there gets Susuma's wife to come over and, like, so they could just, like, talk about things. Like, he doesn't actually tell her, like, your husband has syphilis and now you do too. Him and his father are being very careful about what they're informing her. And Susuma, of course, takes this as a huge affront. He shows up and he's like, I'm taking my wife and my child. We're leaving right now. You're not going to mess with our heads. This is not good for us. You know, like, I told you, it's not a problem. And so that's kind of that for them, unfortunately. It's taken out of their hands. I don't know, is this, you know, we still get more parts where Masao keeps coming along, you know, begging for an explanation. A lot of scenes of Kyoji just standing there, you know, looking, you know, with his head down. That happens a lot in this movie, unfortunately. I do feel like that gets dragged out.
Yeah, I feel like it's just for runtime, like to quote the grind bin, runtime, runtime, runtime.
Yeah. And there was a point where she reveals that after Kyoji has revealed to his father that he's sick, that his father has formally broken off the engagement. Like, now it is real. It's not just him saying it. Like, his father is also like, we reject it. Which I feel like is a bigger deal than they make it. It was probably like a huge insult or something like that.
That feels more specifically cultural.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't, you know, I don't really get the feeling of, like, how marriage would work anyways there. A lot, it seems like even though we have a bunch of romantic love stories and stuff like that, and, like, people that are promised to each other are in love, I do feel like there is a lot of arrangement that goes into the whole process, too.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as strict as, like a Hindu arranged marriage, but
right.
It does kind of get into that area.
Yeah, I feel like they get the, you know, they're prearranged for marriage by their families, but then they do get to court each other, almost. Which is interesting.
Yeah, kind of like what happened to... Are you a fan of Kumail Nanjiani?
I am, in the sense that I've seen some of his stuff, yeah.
No, but before he married his wife, he grew up Muslim in Pakistan, and his parents tried to do an arranged marriage for him, and they sent him a bunch of, like, files, like, every so often of eligible Pakistani women from good families.
Do they cover that in the Big Sick?
Yes, they do.
Okay. I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't either, but I've heard him tell the story on several podcasts.
Oh, interesting.
So I kind of know all the movie already.
Him and his wife are very cool. They're very cool with their whole... they do, like, the Meltdown shows and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and they have a cat named Bagel.
Okay, see, they're the perfect couple.
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. God, I wish I was with him. I mean, her. I mean, never mind. Yeah, well, so after this is revealed, like, this basically sets Misao on the course that she's going to end up married to somebody else anyways, because she says that her father is ill in health and she's not going to be able to help him for much longer, so she needs to get married. It's part of, I guess it's part of tradition, like, you want to get married within your parents' lifetime or something like that. But yeah. That comes into play a bit later. I'm getting kind of mixed up on the last bits. We're already running to the end of this thing.
Like seasons pass, and you can tell time passes when they cut to a fence.
Yeah, and at some point, Rui, the apprentice nurse, has had her child, and at first she's. You know, she seems kind of like, oh, yes, it's my baby and I'm taking care of it, but I don't really enjoy this. And then later there's a part where somebody asks her, oh, how old is it? Oh, 60 days today. Like, oh, you've been paying attention to the individual days. She's like, oh, I guess I have. So it's supposed to indicate, I guess she has more attachment than she thought.
Yeah, she guess she cares about the baby more.
I guess she cares about that baby. Anyway, next movie. And the two big scenes that end up happening are Misao. Is that her name? Or did I just mix it up? It is Misao.
Yeah, Misao. She gets engaged to another man.
She goes to see Kyoji for one last time. Kyoji is actually very pleasant to her. He's like treating her like an old friend. Like there's no hurt between them. But there is obviously, she is still in pain about the whole thing. He's actually relieved because the whole reason why he didn't want to be with her, and he tells this to his father, is like, his father's like, you know, she'll still love you. She'll still want to get married, even if she finds out that you have syphilis. And he says, I know that. She will wait till the ends of the earth if I tell her that that's my problem, and I can't do that to her. You know, she should be able to be happy. And this is the situation. He's happy because he thinks that she's going to be happily married. But there's a lot of talk during the scene. They get out all their she gets out all her feelings. And then at the very end of the scene, she says something about like we need to run off together. You quit your job and I'll go with you and we will just leave right now if we can. And he takes her in his arms, and he leans forward to kiss her, which is all she has wanted. She's wanted him. And he stops himself. He pushes her away, and she leaves because of that. And it's because, like I said earlier, he's discussed that, like, even saliva can transfer this disease to somebody. So he had that moment break of self-control, but he grabbed himself again. The nurse comes in and talks to him about it. And this is where Toshiro gets to really, throw in the acting here. He talks about how he waited the entire time from when he was in the army. He did, he could have slept with a woman and he never did because he knew that Misao was going to be there waiting for him. And then this whole accident happened and it was like God spitting on him, blah, blah, blah,
Yeah, he keeps talking about physical desire,
right?
Versus moral responsibility.
This is the second quiet duel that's going on. Not only is he quietly fighting syphilis, he's also quietly fighting his urges as a man.
Yeah.
And, I like the acting of the scene. I like the way it goes down. I don't like the content of the little speech he goes through. Like, on a psychological level, it's good to finally, let all that stuff out, to actually tell everyone what's going through, or just this person, what's been going on through your head, to let loose and not keep that stuff bottled up, for a moment. On the other hand, it is a man complaining about how he hasn't been able to sleep with a woman.
Yeah. Although Noriko says there might be a woman who doesn't really care.
Yeah. She's like, I think I love you. I was like, no, movie. Don't be doing that.
It's like, I was really hoping that wasn't going to happen. I was like, oh, wow, it went down this road. All right.
And, it doesn't really. Like, they don't start making out or anything like that. No. Of course not. It's a Japanese movie. But it is.
Well, it's a Japanese movie, so they can talk about abortion, but kissing, no.
No. You can show kissing on screen, but nothing else. And it's all, it's not like, how people actually kiss, where, you kiss several times. It's like one long kiss. Oh, there we go. And of course, I don't know if you've seen that screenshot of Toshiro carrying a woman, but that's what it looks like. It's when a man and a woman should be together. No, okay, never mind. Well, I think we're supposed to be applauding this man for holding back his urges, for not throwing himself upon women, like when he was in the army because he knew he had syphilis, or for not throwing himself upon his fiancée because he knew he had syphilis.
Yeah.
And I can't get, I do appreciate the fact that he did not give his fiancée syphilis after he knew he had it. But I'm not going to give him a pat on the back or a cookie.
What I got from this is, by him being a doctor, he is morally superior in certain, compared to Susumu, who is just like a normal guy.
Right.
Who doesn't have to follow what do you call it? Hippocratic oath. Like, I don't know, it felt like, I don't know.
He's morally inclined to do what he thinks is the right thing. There's a part where his dad is talking about his upbringing and says, I'm glad that he got brought up the way he would, because I think if he'd been happy all the time, he wouldn't be, I can't remember what he says, like.
Yeah, he said, misfortune makes people humble.
Yeah, that's basically what he's saying. Like, he'd be full of himself, yeah, if he had been grown up happy. Which, I don't know if that's a good message either. Yeah. So, and then, okay, let's, that basically amounts to nothing other than we get some good acting from Toshiro.
Yeah, and Noriko gets to, sharp her chops, but then instantly he switches back to cold doctor mode.
Right. The last scene, big scene stuff that happens in this movie is that Susumu. Yeah, his wife comes in from out of the outside and the nurse is there to greet him and says, I didn't know you were coming. He's like, I need to see the doctor. It's like, okay. And then she faints right in the front of the thing. So they rush out and get her, and it's just basically, this has died inside her because of the syphilis going untreated.
Yeah.
They have to remove, the fetus from her.
And Susumu told her that it was all a lie.
Yes.
What he said.
Yeah. He did. He told her that the doctor was lying. And the surgery goes successful. We see, what is the character's name?
The wife?
Is Takiko?
Yeah. Takiko? Akiko or Takiko?
They call her Akiko in the, yeah.
Yeah, but on IMDb it's Takiko.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, we see her after the surgery, and she's actually sounds like she's doing well. And the doctor's like, should I call Susumu? And she says, I left him, and I have no intention of going back. And she asks him if there was some reason why he lied about what the doctor had said. So, yeah, the surgery goes off without a hitch, and they're wheeling her down the hallway to her room. And Susumu shows up, drunken out of his mind, And he's like, I have to see my wife. She's right there. What have you done to her? What have you been telling her? She's fine. We're leaving right now. I don't want you to touch her. You know, all this stuff like that. Everybody's trying to hold her back. Luckily, they put his wife into a room. But she's like, me and her and the baby are going to be happy. You see, you're not going to ruin us. You know, I don't know what vendetta you have because of this syphilis thing. And he's like, no, you listen, she came in here. You know, Kyoji's explaining. She came here. She fainted. We had to, you know, perform surgery on her, you know, blah, blah, blah. Something about your baby. And then from out of nowhere, you hear a baby cry. Now, I assume it's not his baby, obviously, right?
I guess not.
Because they were talking about how the fetus was dead.
Yeah, so I guess he assumed it was his baby because he was drunk.
It must have been the nurse's baby, I guess. But yeah, so he's like, I have to see it. I have to go see it. And yeah, he rushes into the room. We don't follow him into the room. He goes into the operating room. And then we just hear a scream. Because apparently, I don't know.
Well, they tell the wife that the... They don't show the wife the baby either.
Yeah. They tell her not to... She isn't going to want to see it. In this state. And... Yeah, that's... I mean, at this point, he goes into kind of a catatonic state. And they say that basically his brain has been cooked because of the untreated syphilis, and this was just the last step to get him over the edge there. So he's on, you know, he's doomed to death, I guess, at this point. Yeah. But the next scene we see Susuma's wife, and she already is looking like she's doing a lot better. The funny thing is she's talking to the nurse, and she's like, hey, you get to start a new life now. Like, let's be optimistic about this. You get treated for your syphilis. You don't have a baby or a husband anymore. Hey, you get a new life. Like, wow. Move. Yeah. I guess you're trying to look on the bright side.
It is a pretty sharp turn.
Yeah. Nurse is like, I just had a baby, but I feel like I'm starting my new life too. And then the end of the movie it's kind of weird. Because we see the two doctors, the father and son, performing surgery on somebody. And there's a voiceover that's like, help me, doctor, please. You've got to help me. I don't want to die. That's the end of the movie.
Yeah, it begins with surgery and ends with surgery.
Yeah, was that guy still awake when he was performing surgery? Or
I guess. I'm not really sure.
It was a very strange moment.
But when Susumu came in drunk and they kind of got into like a tussle, they ended up smashing a glass.
Yeah, like not only glass like on a shelf, but he also like breaks like one of the glass pane window things there.
Yeah, and a glass pane window, I think, was a symbol of him, of like how the syphilis destroyed their lives. And then after he sees the baby and screams, that cuts back to the window pane and a chunk of glass falls.
It falls on Willy, and then the demons from hell come and grab him. Dead, Willy. No? Yeah. No.
Never seen it.
You never seen Ghost, huh?
It always seemed kind of cheesy.
Yeah, you're fine. It's just one of those movies that we had to watch when we were growing up. What was I going to say? I was going to say, I assumed that he was going to, like, accidentally cut his hand when he broke all those glasses, because it's Kyoji who breaks those glasses when he gets pushed over. Like, yeah. That's a perfect opportunity for him to be like, nobody touch me! You know? Like, reveal his big secret or something like that, but like you said, I think they just use it as a metaphor for Susuma's destroyed life.
Yeah.
But not his wife. His wife is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Wink.
And then there's another nurse who kind of didn't do anything.
Yeah, there was some nurse they were talking about that was retiring or something like that, too.
Yeah, like in one of the time passing segments, she's suddenly not there anymore.
Yeah.
And then they mentioned, oh, she retired.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, there are big chunks of time that just aren't talked about, really.
I thought that was interesting, that part where our apprentice nurse was hanging up all those bandages outside to dry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so weird to think of that, like, because that's not something that would happen now.
That's true.
That stuff, you know, that stuff gets treated as medical waste and gets thrown away.
Yeah, well, I guess.
Yeah.
Different time, you had to do something else.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It just I always am fascinated to see like old methods that worked. You know, medical things, because they were all successful doctors. These weren't hacks or anything like that. And there was some word they kept saying that I did not know what the hell it was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Spirochetta?
Yeah.
I guess that's like the name of the syphilis germ or something.
That's bacteria. Really weird. Yeah. They kept saying it over, like, it kept coming up on the subtitles. I'm like, I don't know this word. Like, oh, it could spread. That's spiro shit, or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't go to medical school. I don't really know what the significance of that is.
Wait, you didn't go to medical school?
No.
That's news to me.
I went to community college.
Yeah, same thing.
I like the movie. It's...
Yeah, I saw you give it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, like, I like seeing Toshiro and stuff. Like, this is an example of he just elevates whatever he's in. Like, during this period, not, like, later Toshiro stuff, like, in the 70s. Because he made some kind of blah action movies then. But, now, like, with Kurosawa, like, he just elevates whatever he's in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another step until he gets to, you know, the superstardom that... I don't know. Was he, like, considered, like, a super celebrity or something like that?
Yes, he was. Watch the documentary on him, narrated by Keanu. He was a huge international superstar for... kind of a long time.
Oh, that's cool.
Like 20, 30 years.
Like, and that's why Lucas could get him for Star Wars.
Yeah, like he was like the George Clooney type of, like, he just kept doing like the Toshiro performance and later stuff. He wouldn't really act anymore.
I see.
And like he was just, you know, a huge star from Seven Samurai to like the 80s. And he was in, like, gossip magazines and all the time into early 80s and stuff in Japan for having affairs with younger women.
My God. Well, I don't blame those younger women.
And I learned he and his wife separated in the 70s, and they never divorced. They separated.
Hmm.
And his wife died the same year as Kurosawa's wife.
Yeah, it looks like 2 years before him. 3 children.
Yeah, his son is in the documentary.
Wait a minute, he's Chinese. Get him out of here.
Yeah, that's technically true.
Interesting. I'd like to get a book on him. Or possibly my father.
Yeah, I'd love to see something on Takashi Shimura. I don't know. There's not really much else to talk about with this movie. It's, if you can track it down.
I mean, it's only an hour and a half long. It is a Kurt Kurosawa movie, and he does some camera stuff, which is interesting. But it is blocked like a play. You know, the scenes play out where it's one character has a monologue, and the other, you know, the others are just there to respond. Toshiro doesn't have to do much acting in it because of the nature of his character. He's a very quiet man who's just trying to take care of his business and stuff like that. So it's not a showboat for him.
No, it's him. Like Kinoshita in Wedding got a better reserved performance out of him than Kurosawa did with this.
Yeah. I'd say it's a pretty good movie if you want to see some Kenjiro Uemura, or Mura, who played Susumu.
Yeah, and if you want to see some good Noriko.
Yeah, she does great.
Yeah. Or just watch Scandal, because she's a more lively character in that.
Yeah.
And she's also a lot more adorable in that movie, too.
Well, you didn't like that she was a weirdo that was just hanging out in the hospital?
No. Anything else? Really?
No, really? I got nothing else for the Quiet Duel. What are we doing next?
The second of this pairing is Here's to the Young Lady, a Kinoshita picture starring Setsuko Hara.
This is just the Setsuko Hara podcast.
Yeah, it might become that.
Works for me.
Although she quit acting when Ozu died.
Ah.
And then kind of became
a politician.
Actually became a recluse. And Malayan actress is allegedly inspired by her. Allegedly. I don't know if it's true or not.
Huh.
I still haven't seen Malayan actress, but I hear it's good.
Me neither. Kinoshita.
Uh-huh. He is doing like 2 or 3 movies a year at this time, in the 40s.
Is that available online? Or is that another hard one to get?
No, it's available on Filmstruck. Or in some Kinoshita DVD set through Criterion.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's Kinoshita, so I'm sure it'll be good, not great.
Well, it's going to be really good. Shut up.
Okay.
Let's wrap this sucker up, because, you know, just like when you shouldn't get syphilis, I'm done. Wait. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, so I was on my episode of Grind Bin, finally dropped the day of the recording of this recording on the movie Coonskin by Ralph Bakshi. We talk about a lot of stuff, like Rudra Moore, and whether or not it's okay for Ralph Bakshi to make a movie about black people.
It is not.
No, but it's still... Listen to the episode of The Grind Bin with me. It's episode 74 or 75. I forgot which one. And, Cinema Knife Fight this month is September. I'm covering a little TV movie called Baffled, starring Leonard Nimoy, where he plays a race car driver who has psychic visions of the future.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
This is your episode of Grindman is number 74.
74, yeah.
Yeah.
If you have, if you listen to Grindman, you should. It's a fun podcast.
Yeah, especially for digging up the kind of movies that I don't think most people will want to sit down and spend the time with unless they're, you know, drunk, stone, whatever.
Or weirdos that like that stuff.
Yeah, like us.
Yeah.
Or them.
And hopefully I want Mike from the Grind Bin to be on to talk about some sleazy 70s girl gang movies, because there are quite a few.
We should have him on and do like 2 or 3 of them, like in like a special.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's one in particular that is a girl gang movie mixed with a Crown International picture that
nice.
Is totally up Grind Bin alley. That sounds gross.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Now I got that image in my head. No.
So, let's see. Got the Grind Bin, Summer Knife Fight. I was on School of Schlock in June or July talking about Return of the Kung Fu Dragon. It's a dumb but kind of interesting kung fu movie from the 70s. It's a Taiwan movie. Taiwanese. And I talk about Wu-Tang Clan a little bit on an episode. If you want to hear me talk about rap music a little bit for 2 minutes.
Mm.
Yeah, so there's all that stuff. You can listen to the tag for our Twitter and email shit.
If you want to hear me talk about science fiction and fantasy movies with my friends Aaron and Sarah, you can listen to us on Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space. Every Monday, new episodes. Most recently, we talked about the movie Willow. We actually just reached our 100th episode, so we talked about the movie that started it all for us, which was Hardware from 1990, And that's, it's, I didn't think I was going to have the reaction I did, which was that I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to. I remember thinking it was like, oh, this is actually a really interesting science fiction movie. And this time it was like, well, it starts off that way, and then it just kind of, but yeah, spoiler for that. We also talked about Existenz recently. It's a fan delicious. What's the name of that director?
Cronenberg.
Yeah, delicious Cronenberg movie, all about the perils of virtual reality and giving up your life to live in one that's not real.
Well, it's Cronenberg, so it's a good idea, but bad execution.
Yeah, and
except
as
for the fly. The fly is great. Oh, everything yeah, sure. else is kind of blah.
Absolutely.
There, I said it. Deal with it.
Okay. I mean, I like his movies.
I don't. Besides well, Fly.
That's because you're not white, like me.
Including Videodrome, I don't like that either. It's kind
well,
of boring.
I've not seen it, and the way James Woods acts makes me not want to watch any movie he's in ever again.
I mean, he's a scumbag in it, because he's supposed to be a scumbag in it.
Well, he's a scumbag in real life.
That's also very true.
It's just, it's not acting. It's like, I'm not even going to read the script. I'm just a scumbag. Hey, James Wood. Anyway. And by the time this comes out, we will have done an episode on The Portrait of Jenny, which is a 1948 movie about a man.
Is that? Who started that?
Joseph Cotten.
No, it's the producer.
It's David O. Selznick is the that producer. Guy,
yeah. Okay, that's a movie I really want to see. I just haven't been able to watch it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh.
It's only 86 minutes long, so real quick.
Oh, so the opposite of Sound of Music.
Yeah, I assume. I haven't seen
that. No, Gone to the Wind. I get those two mixed up all the time.
It's like 3 hours and 20 minutes, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but yeah, David O. Selznick produced this movie with, I forgot the lead actress's name, but she won an Oscar.
Her name is Jennifer Jones.
Yeah, I think she won an Oscar for Gone with the Wind.
Five-time Academy Award nominee. She won the Academy Award for Best Actress for The Song of Bernadette in 1943.
Yeah.
She's also in The Towering Inferno, Beat the Devil. Yeah, lots of stuff like that. Anyways, that episode's coming out pretty soon.
Okay.
And yeah, all that stuff is on iTunes, Stitcher, all the regular places. Please don't send me into outer space.
Where did you find Portrait of Jenny? On DVD?
Yes.
Okay.
I got it from a rental place. We actually have a rental place. We can go there.
Oh, I don't.
Well, too bad.
Because I'll have to order it. Okay, yeah, that's all. Thug Life, Afia Zane, hashtag Knock Die Forever. He's still alive, still kicking.
Hashtag Pineapple Watermelon Party.
Yeah, we'll see ya for Here's to the Young Lady, starring Setsuko Hara, on Filmstruck.
Let's hear it for the young lady. Okay. Bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show is available on the Google Play Store, Podiant, PODIANT, Podbean, as bean, not beam, and iTunes, and wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening.
Put on your brain from the soul of a man with a cane on the side of his waist as he wanders the earth for the 28th time on the crime for the angel of death. Not quite what you think. He's a man full of peace. Used to be full of shit. Life running over. Spill it. Blood fill it. Cup won't kill it. Put it back in the chamber. Never the got you can feel it. But I can't sweat it. Can't let it get too close. Cause I'm on my tour on a mission. Gotta be back on this planet. But I gotta listen to my boss. Coughs. Losing my wings. Can't get that. So I take strides. Open up eyes. Building my size. Holding my ties by giving advice that won't suffice. So I need to make time slow down for a man. Headed to the